welcome inside Wisdom Gaming Studios here with T-Wolves Gaming. Legend, do you want to go with? Bear de Beast. And I'm sure that my audience is wondering why I am here interviewing a 2K gamer. But the reason is because the Minnesota Vikings drafted Kyrie Jackson out of Oregon. And Kyrie Jackson had a choice in his life of whether to play football or to become a professional 2K gamer. He chose football. Now he's with the Vikings. I think he made the right choice. But that really got me thinking as a fan of video games. What would it have been like if Kyrie Jackson had instead chased the video game career? So I found a guy who has a video game career in 2K. Bear, thanks for doing this, man. I really appreciate it. And I would love to just hear you talk about your career to start off, and then we can talk about how you got here. But the day-to-day basis of being a professional gamer, what is that like?
Shout out Kyrie, because he's a really good guy. I had a few conversations with him.
Oh, you did? Okay, yeah, that's awesome.
He's a really good dude. But it's kind of just like any other profession or any other job, any other career. We put in a lot of time, a lot of hours. I wouldn't say it's so much 9 to 5 because we play video games. So in season, we're more like a 11 to 5, and then we go home from 7 till whenever we can get some sleep in. So it's a lot of time, a lot of hours. We enjoy what we do, so it makes it a lot easier to put the time in. But for the most part, man, if you just think of NBA structure and not so much what it takes physically, but the time that these guys, the athletes, have to put in. If you think of my world, because it consists of trades and sponsorships, and the whole thing is just kind of just NBA, but virtual. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh, that makes sense. I mean, what is a practice like for you? I mean, how do you go about in staying sharp, improving your game, building chemistry with your teammates? Like, what is the process like for that?
So I played football growing up, and I was absolutely terrible. I was horrible. I was absolutely bad. So I was.
But you got length. I mean, could you at least be a wide receiver or something? Can you not catch the ball?
I was on scout team 100% of the time. That was me. I was scout team dummy. They put me out there to go get banged up by the starting defense. That was me. So we come in, and instead of a scout team, we just scrimmages other professional teams. So we might play the Lakers, might play Philadelphia 76ers, Cleveland Cavaliers. So we play these other teams all day long. We scrimmage them. So it's five of us on a team. Us five are controlling five players on a video game, and they have five, and they're controlling five players on a video game. 10 people playing at one time. We run plays, we have strategies, and we pretty much do that all day long. We break down film, we find out players' tendencies to try to get better. All this is so much to it to break down.
So I want to go back to when you started on this path. I mean, first, I guess I imagine I won't reveal your age because you're the older guy in the team. But
thank you.
You probably started out when there was no such thing as a career in gaming, or not even an imagination that there could be
Correct.
A career in gaming. So at what point did you discover that, hey, this is actually a possibility? This is something that I could really chase and pursue.
So probably similar to Kyrie. Was just, you just grow up and you have a gaming system, and we're outside, you're playing sports all the time, street lights come on, you go in the house, you're bored, start playing a video game. Then you start to realize that, hey, I'm pretty good at this, and you start beating all your friends in the neighborhood, and then you start, you know, rivaling other neighborhoods, and they're bringing their best player, you're beating them, and then it goes to a thing of like, all right, who's the best guy in the city? Let's start bringing the neighboring cities around, let's start playing them, and you know, you set up some games and you play for, you know, $20, $50, $100, whatever the case may be. Then you start to realize that you're pretty good, and you start going to these GameStop tournaments. I actually started out playing Madden first. And when I really figured out that I was really, really good is I about made the Madden bus. I was one game away from Madden bus. I was running the clock out. Instead of kneeling the ball, I ran the ball, fumble, scoop and score in six. And I should have just kneeled it, but I was one game off the Madden bus, and this was like 12 or 13. And from that point, I was like, yo, I'm pretty good at video games. But like I said, there was no career in it. And as the years went along, around 16, 17, 2K came out with a big tournament, 250,000. And my team finished fourth. And that was with just my point guard from college, my actual brother, my actual cousin, and a guy we just found off a line. And the other teams was playing with the best guy from Texas, the best guy from Florida. So I'm like, if I go do that, I got a really good chance to be successful. So that's kind of where it started at.
Now, I thought that Madden players are supposed to be great at game management. You not kneeling the ball down, and I don't really that understand your thought process there.
It was horrible. It was horrible. Just in the moment, I don't know why. I could have just took my kneel and I'd have been on the bus. And one of the worst decisions of my life.
Well, that's how it goes. So as you're discovering that you're good at this, what makes you good at this? Like, what I mean, because we were talking before this about just how I played video games growing up, and I was pretty nasty at NBA Jam. I was pretty good at 007, you know, first person shooter, less so than the sports games, but I could hack Madden pretty good when they came out with the 64 versions and so forth. I would never think that I was actually great at it, though. Like, oh, I can win games on all Madden or beat my friends or whatever little friendly tournament we would have. But I didn't think I was actually great at it. So what type of skills do you have that separates you from every average person like me just playing away in my basement?
So I will stick to the, I'm gonna stick to the 2K side because I was pretty good at Madden. But 2K side, so I actually had a real life basket. So I played college for 4 years. I graduated, played college ball for four years. And that from this field where I'm at now, that gives me a competitive advantage because I actually understand flare screens and bumping on the down screen and when to switch, when to soft hedge, hard hedge. I'm used to running plays. I'm used to the concept of actual basketball. So one thing we get to do is with our team is a lot different than other teams. We actually convert real life into 2K mechanics, which is different because everything doesn't work exactly the same, but we implement 80, 70% of real life into a video game. So
you get on a real court with this?
Not this, but I did before.
Oh, you did?
College.
Okay.
College. Okay. Yeah. I'm washed up now. I'm all the way washed. Oh, okay. Yeah, you don't want to see me go hoop in real life now. I'm terrible. So, but we bring some of those same Timberwolves plays, horn sets, 1-4 low, 5 out, what Boston is running now. So we different concepts and we bring them into real 2K. And then for me, just being a natural competitor, I probably go over the top with preparation. As far I can show you, man, I got notebooks. Like I notebooks and tendencies of players and the tendencies of him bouncing the ball twice to the right, and then he wants to get back left, or this is his hot spot, or this is where he likes to shoot. He tends to go 80% more to this right wing. Just I nerd that type of stuff out, and then the amount of time I put in is ridiculous. So we put way too much time into it, and that's going to help you be good. So if you add the brain with the actual plan of the game, it's a good combination.
But all of this sounds like, as we relate it to Kyrie Jackson, stuff that an athlete would have built into them. So probably his love for football, his ability with football, would have played into him doing these things. What separates those? So obviously what separates you from me is everything you just said. But what separates? So he was talking about being in like the top 250. But to be at this level, the absolute top level, to win a championship as you did, to be MVP as you did, what is the difference between someone who's good and great?
So I would say just the mental behind it of understanding the nuances of the game and the amount of time and preparation that you can put into it. Mm-hmm. So if you could put the time and the preparation into it, and then you have the mental to understand what goes on within the game, and for him to make it to that level, who's to say he couldn't make it to the NBA 2K League? When you got that competitive fire, and he's the difference is he's an athlete. You know, I'm nowhere near the athlete of that. But if he could put the time in, and the level that he's playing at, and the concept that he's already learned on a football field, we're not going to be running any more complex than a D1 team is running at an NBA 2K professional level. So mentally he's probably got it, and work ethic he's probably got it. So that's he might be right there with us.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that there are so many things that cross over. And when you're talking about that preparation, I mean, that's everything in football, is that there are a lot of great athletes in the world, but the guys who understand the game the best are the ones who get that little bit of an edge. And if he already has that mentality to make the NFL, then he may have been able to take it a step farther.
Correct.
So explain to me what game day is like for you? Because, I mean, I know what it's like for NFL players, but what is that like for you? What is the game like? Just to, like, take me inside of that.
We want to mimic those guys as much as possible. We're playing the music. We're hyping each other up. We're doing the push-ups, and we're not about to go be physical at all. So we're doing the push-ups before the game. We got the loud music going. We're hyped because it's something we're passionate about. So we come in, and we come to practice. It's a high vibe day right here. It's a good vibe day. It's game day. So we're watching our film. We're going over who the guys were about to play. And then we get the vibes going. We got the music going. We got the push-ups going. The guys are rallying around the who and the high. And we're doing that, but we're about to go play a video game. But the passion and the love is so high that energy has got to be released. So very, very, very similar. It's just we're not about to go knock somebody's helmet off.
Right. What do you make of the way that this industry has kind of come together and just where it stands now? To have a league like this is, again, I mean, it's just something I couldn't have even dreamed of, but I think is really, really cool. And when you go to your YouTube page, or you go to just, you know, streamers and things like that, and the careers that are being created in this, I guess, what do you make of where things stand now with gaming?
I never thought it would get to this point. I couldn't see a world to where people are influencers and content creators and your whole job is Twitch and YouTube. I probably make just as much on my 2K salary off season and I do in season from content creation. And I never thought it'd become this thing of showing people how to play a video game, where you're entertaining to play a video game. I didn't know it'd be a professional league. So this is, I mean, from us growing up and the way kids are growing up now, it's a lot different. So it's probably we're used to seeing kids outside doing whatever, and now they're more inside and they're playing video games. Like, this is what's hot. This is like each generation is different, and right now the video game wave, if it's got a good chance to, it's some video games right now that like perceive viewings of the Super Bowl. Their championship viewings of the Super Bowl. So like, it's gaming is huge, and I think it's here to stay, and I hope with my league it continues to get bigger so I can get paid more.
Well, what I do like about your story, though, is that most the video game tropes are sort of like, oh, this guy's in his basement or whatever, which actually is where my video games are set up. So that is true. But the fact that you are a former athlete, it's like you don't have to do just one thing. You know, that sort of story. And I think that Kyrie and you are both evidence of that. If you were to play an average person, what would that look like? Like, if we dialed it up here in this studio, how bad would that be for me?
Yeah, it'd look like me trying to go catch a pass on Kyrie right now. it's just he's a pro. He's a professional. I do it all the time. And that's a part of the content that I get to sell, is I go play the average Joes, the average people of the world, and I do it all the time on my Twitch. And it's, let's say, about halfway through the second quarter, the pros are, we're pretty bored. If we're going four quarters, we're pretty bored, because halfway through the second quarter, we're probably up 20, 30, 40 points. And if we kept that pace up, we're going to win every game by 100. It's what we do for a living. It's different. And people don't understand that when you do it for a living, it's different. And y'all can have plenty of time. I got my five a lot. We can play whenever y'all want to play. My off season is about 2 months from now. Ends about, I think we end around late June. So from when new 2K drop, my five is ready to play. We're ready to hoop against anybody. So there's a chance for them to play, but yeah, it could get bad.
Yeah, well, I just enjoy when there are people on social media that say about NFL players, like, oh, you know, I could get out there and I could get a couple yards against those guys. Like, nope, you'd be dead. Yeah. So at least you're just emotionally dead if they play you, as opposed to physically playing against Kyrie Jackson. I wanted to ask you, just for my own curiosity, about your first Madden game and what, like, got you excited about Madden, because people who listen to the show know that I make Madden comparisons to the real NFL all the time, because I've played it since childhood.
Yeah.
I've gotten actually quite bad at the most recent games because I feel like they're too complicated, right? From some of the old games, from the NFL Blitz and so forth, where you just drop it back and passing. But what was your first, what did you love about playing Madden?
I want to say the first ones was kind of 99, 2000. I think that was some of the first Maddens I played. But just in the house at the time, you know, we got the PlayStation. PlayStation knew it was around the time. My older brother and all his friends would come over And that was the hot thing to do, was play the PlayStation like that. So as me being a younger brother, I'm like, yo, my big brothers are playing. That's what the guys are playing. That's what's cool to do. So I just wanted to hop on and play the game. And they would absolutely destroy me. And then around 11, about 10 to about 2010, I didn't lose to those guys. I didn't lose to them anymore. But that I got hot, really hot amongst the world in like 2012, 2013.
So were you a pass first guy, run first guy?
Yeah, I was. As soon as they come out, I could tell if you're in a cover three, I could tell if you're blitzing, I could tell if you're in a cover two. I'm flood concept the whole game. I'm sending too many people to one side that you don't have in your zone. If it's man, we're sending crossing routes. If you don't got enough in the box, I'm running. So understanding the concepts is where I excelled at. And so understanding the game, I can't do any of that in real life, but I was more of a, I'm a pass. I'm going to pass all game long. And then if you make me run, I'm going to take this 4 or 5 yards every time.
For me, four verticals, running back comes out underneath that everybody chases, and then that guy's wide open underneath. I mean, if I'm playing with Marshall Faulk or something back in the day, I mean, I'm getting 200 catches in a season with Marshall Faulk coming underneath on that play. So last thing for you, how about this? I'm sure that Kyrie has not given up gaming. I'm sure he's still doing it. I'm sure he's still extremely good at 2K.
Yeah.
What's your advice for him? I mean, because he's going to have time. He's going to be studying the playbook. But if you think that everyone has to be studying their playbook for 100% of their life, you're wrong. Don't make fun of Kyler Murray and his video games. Please stop doing that. But if you're going to give him some advice, if he says, hey, man, help me get even better than I am, what would
you say? Shout out K1. K1 a good dude, too. He loves 2K. And Kyler Murray is a dog at 2K.
Oh, yeah? He's
like,
legit?
So I haven't hooped with Kyrie. I've hooped with Kyler a lot. I think he could be in the league hands down.
Oh, really?
Like, not even, like, if I had to put money up, I would bet money that if he, and this is just the time off from him, he's smart. You could tell that he's smart. Oh, yeah. You could tell this dude does something else, and he understand. He could read, like, it's fun to watch him because I'm a fan of his game, and then when I watch him play the video game, I'm like, I know he'd be picking dudes apart on Sunday. Pick dudes apart on Sunday because he do it in 2K. He's sharp, man. He's smart. But shout out K1. But Kyrie gonna play the game anyway. He's a gamer. So those guys, Kyrie, Kyler Murray, once they're gonna go, they're gonna do their work, they're gonna do what they're supposed to do on the field, and then they got downtime, they gonna do what they enjoy. The same way everybody else do what they enjoy. It just looks different, but he's a gamer. He's gonna play the game. So continue to play the game. Don't let nobody knock you from playing the game.
Bear the Beast, and that is your YouTube, right?
As well, everything across the board: YouTube, Twitch, Instagram, Facebook, everything.
Well, Bear, it was really great to meet you. Thank you so much to you guys here for letting me come by, and I feel like it was a pretty random request to come by and talk about a football player. But great job breaking it all down. Thank you so much for doing this. It's great to meet you.
No, I appreciate you for stopping by. Thank y'all for tuning in, and it was good meeting you.
Yeah, good to meet you too.
We definitely could do it again.
Joining me, old friend Hobie Arteague, who used to work at Fox 9 here locally in Minneapolis, but now is in Detroit at WDIV, Local 4 News. What is going on, man? How are you?
Not too much. Just making my tour of the NFC North. I was in Wisconsin a little back in my career, then went to Minneapolis, and then now in Detroit. So just have Chicago left, but I'm happy with where I'm at. We have a lot of family here in Detroit, so it's good to be around family.
Well, there is an issue with the time zone that you're in.
Yes.
Eastern time. It's not great. Central time is much better, but exciting times to be in Detroit and Michigan sports with the national champion Michigan team and a Detroit team that went to the NFC championship. So we're going to get into both because you had a chance to cover J.J. McCarthy. In fact, a picture that was shared around the internet, a lot of J.J. McCarthy had you sticking out a microphone as one does. I just want to hear about it. I want to hear what it was like for you to cover that championship team.
It was incredible, especially from the Ohio State game on. Well, let's go back a little bit. Probably the Penn State game on, because that's whenever everything went crazy with Jim Harbaugh and the suspension. But from Penn State, and then you had another game, and then Ohio State, and then the Big Ten championship, and then that Alabama game, that Rose Bowl, was probably one of the most incredible sports experiences I've ever had, bar none. Just because it is the quintessential place to watch college football. That was great in and of itself. I would say it was better than the national championship game, because of just the allure of where you are. But as for the team itself, I mean, it's hard to go 15-0 in any year of college football. Leading the way is your new quarterback in J.J. McCarthy. And that picture, by the way, was taken walking off of the field at the Rose Bowl. And that moment in time, I can tell you in that picture, we were walking in the tunnel with all of the fans chanting his name. That's from that exact moment. But great quarterback on and off the field. You guys should be happy to have him.
So the season is interesting because, you know, we get to the national championship game where against Washington, he largely just has to hand the ball off. There wasn't a lot that J.J. McCarthy had to do in that game, but in against Alabama, he did have to do a lot more. How did you view that entire thing as it was going on? Where you mentioned the Penn State game,
Yeah. They're
mostly handing off in that game, focusing on their defense. It was a completely stacked team, but as it went along, how did you kind of see that team come together around McCarthy?
My whole thing with everybody wants to talk about his stats in that Penn State game where he didn't throw the ball in the second half. Think about the context of what was going on there. They're on their way to Pennsylvania. They land and find out that Jim Harbaugh is suspended. They are just put on the spot and then just kind of taking it as it goes. And think about it in the context of they were just trying to get in there, get a win, and get out to keep their undefeated season going. I think that's what a lot of it is. And this was a team that liked to run the ball a lot. Against Maryland, J.J. had an up-and-down game. I believe he had an interception in the red zone, if I'm not mistaken. But then Ohio State, he made all the throws he had to make. Against Alabama, though, if you go back and watch the final 3 minutes of that game, not the overtime, the final 3 minutes where they needed to tie the game to force OT, J.J. really took control in that situation right there. And I think that that's when you saw him really rally the troops and move forward to keep that national championship hope alive. Because in that second half, they were not moving the ball against Alabama. Alabama had their number, but somehow he provided the spark and drove them downfield to tie the game. And then they went on into OT to win it.
The one thing that comes to mind with McCarthy the most, I think, is just how young he really is. When we talk about even his last season in Michigan and the fact that, you know, he comes out at the right time after you win a national championship. And if you're being talked about as a top 10 draft pick, you should probably just go into the NFL and start your process there because, you know, that's your ultimate goal. But I think it has to be contextualized versus some of the other quarterbacks in college football that this was not somebody who had 3 or 4 years of starting experience like many of the other quarterbacks. And I wavered on this a bit because you can certainly find a lot to work with if you're looking for tape that makes him look good or stats that make him look good. And then there's the other side of it where you try to weigh, hey, this guy was playing for one of the best college teams that I can remember. I mean, they just blew the doors off almost everybody, including Washington in the national championship game. How do you think that he grew throughout the season as a quarterback?
That's a good question, because at the beginning of the season, he had one of his worst games of the year against Bowling Green. He had 3 interceptions in that game, and I think he was forcing the ball a lot. And I think the more time went on, the more he would let the game come to him. Because his first year starting, he wasn't the starter going into the season, because he was battling with Cade McNamara to win that starting job he wanted, and then he was the starter moving on. But actually, from that TCU game, where they lost in the Fiesta Bowl, I think that that changed him as a quarterback, because he had 2 pick-sixes in that game, and that really changed the trajectory of that Fiesta Bowl. And I think that's why he took it so hard on himself after that game. But the way he was able to manage the offense and be the calm within the storm, I think that is one thing you can tell that's how he is off of the field, but also on the field too. He doesn't really get rattled, especially in that second half of the year. Teams would blitz him, and he would roll right, or he would even roll left and then throw darts down the field. I think that embracing that calm side, because you see him meditating before the games, I think he was able to hone that aspect of his game in being the calming presence with all of the weapons around him.
And somebody said to me about McCarthy that some of his mistakes throughout the year, I mean, of course, youth would play a role in it, but some of his mistakes were, I've handed off for two quarters here and I'm tired of handing off and I just want to make a play. I want to be the reason that we win. And that's another thing that you can go back and forth all day long on was, well, the offense is not built for the quarterback. Shouldn't it be if he's a first round draft pick versus the way that he managed it and the NFL type of stuff that he had to do? How ready do you think he is from watching him more up close? Obviously I've gone back and watched the games, but really seeing it progress, because we're kind of debating this as well. He hasn't thrown a lot of passes, but he did play for a coach that was an NFL coach. And I guess you can make an argument a lot of different ways.
And you say that NFL coach now, who is Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh was saying how JJ McCarthy is going to be the best quarterback that has played at Michigan. I mean, as a guy who played at Michigan, for him to say that, that just shows you how much confidence he has in him. If they didn't have Justin Herbert in LA, JJ McCarthy might be a Charger right now. But the way JJ has played the game as it has come to him, especially as I was saying down the back half of last season, he didn't need to be the guy. And I said going into the draft process that he needed to go to the right situation for him. Because if you're relying on him to be your quarterback that is going to be like the Lamar Jackson, that is going to make every single play that his offense needs him to make, he might not be your guy. But I view the Vikings for him as a perfect situation. He has a wide receiver one. He has a wide receiver two. He has a tight end in TJ Hockenson. He has two bookend tackles with Darisaw and O'Neal, and a solid, experienced interior offensive line. You put him behind that, it's very similar to how it was at Michigan. He didn't need to be the guy. He just had to be the guy to get the ball in the right spots and make things happen when his name was called. If he can carry that over, it kind of goes hand in hand from college to the pros if you look at it from that scope.
I think that he can to start off, but ultimately Kevin O'Connell's going to want a lot of throwing of the football. I mean, we saw that from Kirk Cousins, where it was an interesting approach because Cousins previously, they had tried to hide him. It was hand off to Dalvin Cook, play action, hand off to Dalvin Cook, hand off to Dalvin Cook, play action for Cousins. And what O'Connell said was, you know what? That's who you have been, but I'm going to put it all on your shoulders. And we did see quite a bit of success from Kirk Cousins in doing that. So I think that his goal would be to take JJ McCarthy over the years. And this is where you have to look into the future, because what you saw has to grow on multiple different levels. And by the way, I'm impressed you showing off your Vikings knowledge that you haven't forgotten. Although I will question the interior offensive line comment. You know how people feel about that around here. But I think that with McCarthy, a lot of it is just looking at what he did last year and going, I can see the tools that can become something to 2 years from now. We're saying, hey, this offense is entirely on your back.
And you saw it at the combine and you see it in game film. He throws great out routes and he can get the ball down the field if he needs. But you mentioned like interior pressure. Watch how he scrambles out of the pocket and uses his legs. Kirk got better at that as time went on in Minnesota. Hey, look.
Ish.
He did. Compared to when he started to where he finished, he used his feet a lot more to escape pressure. Here's the thing. If that's what you're looking for from a quarterback, though, that's what JJ can do. Because if he feels the pressure and he feels the pocket collapsing, he might not take off downfield. He did that in the national championship game against Washington, and he did that multiple times last season. But he can roll left and make the throw. There's a throw in the Nebraska game, if you can find it, go back and watch it, where he rolls left and just fires a laser into the end zone. And that is extremely hard for any quarterback, let alone a guy just starting for his second year. He can do it right. He can do it rolling right. He can do it rolling left. I think that his legs, in addition to his arm, could be the total package for a quarterback if put in the right situation like he is right now with the Vikings.
I remember that play because it looks like he's going to throw to the guy underneath, and he actually fires it all the way to the back line, which was extremely impressive. You are right that in 2022, Kirk had a couple of notable scrambles that we never saw coming. He reached like 19 miles an hour on one of them. He ran in the Buffalo game. You are right about that, but that's the thing about, you know, I get this question all the time about the interior offensive line. You can't put them in if they've got a bad interior. The point of drafting him is that you can. And in the NFL, there will be pressure up the middle, no matter who you're playing. That 90% of the league is pressured at least 30% of the time. So you are going to see that. I'm curious about what you found out about his personality, because so far, I would say from my perspective, not a lot. Like this is someone who has been really singular minded, and this is not a criticism at all, but singular minded since he was a little kid to become the football player that he is now. I mean, the meditating, I made a joke about it once. People got upset in the comments. I was just kidding. But aside from the meditating, and a lot of that sounds very Kirkian in the way that he has a lot of different techniques for dealing with certain things and wants to put all the effort into it. Again, not a criticism there. But aside from that, seems like a football boy raised to be a football man. And I don't know that there's a lot else, which again, I think is probably a good thing for someone who has to dedicate everything to this position.
He likes listening to Bob Marley.
Okay.
Jammin' is his favorite song that he said. That's his hype-up song. I asked him that before the national championship game.
Interesting. Is that a hype-up song?
I don't know. Look,
I think that's a chill song.
He just gets you in the zone, I guess, and he's just ready to jam on the field. I have never – he is an overly optimistic and positive person. He always had a smile on his face. And granted, when you're undefeated, there's a lot of reasons to have a smile on your face. And a lot of teammates that I talked to, so like during the pre-draft process, we went out to Pro Day and we interviewed a lot of the players that were drafted. And I talked to a few of them, whether they were offense or defense. And I said, what is a team getting in J.J. McCarthy? That was the question that I asked him. And a lot of them just mentioned his leadership. And I'm not naive to think that college locker rooms and NFL locker rooms are the same in any way, shape, or form. But one teammate, it was Chris Jenkins, he said, that guy gives 110% every time he gets out onto the field. And as good as he is, he's humble enough to carry everybody with him. Like, that's a ringing endorsement. Then I asked one of his offensive linemen, I said, at what point did you know that he had it? And he said, from the first time I saw him huddle, I knew he was going to be a first-round pick. And he just mentioned how he has this aura and this confidence about him that rubs off on other people whenever you get around him. And it, when teammates are saying that about you, that's an acknowledgement that didn't have to be said. And guys are going out to say that about him. But I will tell you, after the game, if you want to know how badly he wants to win, all he did at Michigan, aside from that Fiesta Bowl, was win. After that game, he goes to the podium. Somebody asks a question about TCU and did they show that they belonged with the big names and the blue bloods of college football. JJ was the first person to answer. He says his piece and said, I promise you we'll be back in this spot next year, and left. That's how much he wants to win. It's just that it ate him up that much that he just needed to say his piece and leave. That's one thing I'll always remember from him, which is rare, because he always would finish press conferences or give you his undivided attention for any interview that we'd ever did with him.
What I keep finding about him is that there are a lot of football cliches that we try to stay away from as journalists. So when someone says, hey, the guy just gives it all the time, you're like, all right, tell me something interesting. Yeah. Does he do anything weird? Yet at the same time, a lot of them matter at the end of the day. And when you talk about the overly optimistic element, you and I have seen this up close and personal, how much drama is involved in an NFL season. Yeah. If there wasn't, there wouldn't be so many people who watched, but there's a lot of ups and downs. I mean, through the years, one thing that impressed me the most about Kirk Cousins was that he could have pretty much anything going on, truth to all rumors with Stephon Diggs or whatever off the field type of thing was going on with teammates or criticism from Mike Zimmer at the podium. And yet the next game, he would just play like Kirk Cousins again, that it never seemed to be something we could say, oh, well, this week they had this problem, so he's going to be off. He was never like that. And I think that overly optimistic person, that would be the one thing that's opposite. And I know I bring up Kirk here just as a matter of comparison, since we covered him for so long. Kirk was so hard on himself to the point where you were like, dude, it's fine. You threw a touchdown.
Is it going to be a detriment to yourself? Yeah.
And I think that McCarthy being overly optimistic could actually play highly in his favor for dealing with adversity that comes along, but also maybe not driving himself into a hole sometimes, where I feel like that did happen to Cousins.
And with the way It's overly optimistic, but it's also a confidence too. I think that's how it is with JJ. He likes to go out and just have fun and be with his teammates. That's what he says is his favorite part of the game. That's the big thing with him.
Yeah, and I think that you see that very naturally. Like, I don't the sense that I got, and this is like one press conference, we met one time here, but the sense that I get is that it's natural, it's not forced. Because you and I have seen this enough. We know when it's forced, right?
And also, too, to your point of him being in the spotlight and being able to block out distractions, the kid was a starter very young in high school, brought his team to a championship game. Then he goes to IMG Academy, where for high school, the spotlight is on you as a high school football program. Then you come to Michigan as one of the premier colleges where you're the starting quarterback. He has had to deal with being the guy or under the microscope his entire career from the time he's in high school. So I think that if you're questioning if he's mentally ready for the big stage and the bright lights of the NFL, I think it's no question that he said too through the pre-draft process, he goes, I'm just trying to keep the house clean. And he was talking about the house being my head. And trying to block out all the distractions of being a guy who was considered a second round pick to now being considered potential top five, top 10 pick. And so I think he's how I was saying, how he keeps the calm on the field. That's what he tries to do off of the field too, to just kind of keep it all into perspective, so nothing gets magnified too big.
All right. Now, in the matter of journalistic integrity, if there is something that's going to not work, what would that be with McCarthy and his transition from college to the NFL?
Trying to force the ball when the play is not there. Wanting to make a play when it just isn't there. And he might do that whenever he's starting out in the NFL, because every quarterback goes through growing pains. Not everybody has a season like C.J. Stroud just had. But most of the time, quarterbacks go through growing pains. And it's just, can you let the game come to you and use your ability without having to do too much, without trying to do too much? I think that would be the biggest thing for me.
You know who has this problem exactly is the Vikings' other quarterback, Sam Darnold. When you watch him play, and I went back and watched a bunch of games from Carolina, trying to do too much is probably the hardest thing in the sport for a quarterback, right? Because if you don't try to do too much, then you check down when you shouldn't be checking down, which I'm not pointing
at
any... Not pointing any fingers when it comes to that, but that did happen probably too many times on third and long or fourth and eight, et cetera. But if you try to make too many plays, then you end up making a lot more mistakes than you need to make. And so trying to figure out where that line exists is really difficult. Patrick Mahomes makes it look so easy, but it's really not. And that's even Josh Allen, I think, is probably the second best quarterback in the league, hands down. And he still struggles with that. When should you go deep with it? When should you try to make a play? I also do think that McCarthy will have to learn to put some air under the football, because the deep balls, like if you don't put the right arc underneath them, they will just flatten out and they'll get intercepted in the NFL. Right, yeah, I mean, there was one he threw against the Gophers. I was at the game, and he's just trying to throw like an outfielder from the wall to home, like Ichiro Suzuki style or something, just trying to throw, you know, laser beam. And this is my knowledge of baseball at this moment, that's the first name that came to my mind when I was thinking arm strength. But I think there's a lot to adapt, I think, in his game, and how he makes those adjustments and how he makes those decisions will determine where he goes. But I also have come around, even just talking about this the last few days, to I want him on the field earlier than later if that's the only issue. If he's not having any trouble learning the offense, but he's just whipping it into traffic too much, like let's let him whip it into traffic and figure out that he can't. I want to ask you about those Detroit Lions that are now the darlings of the National Football League. And tell me first, though, I mean, you got there in what, 2022 is when you arrive, right? I mean, the heck is that like? I mean, with Detroit getting to that city at just the moment where they're taking off.
I don't want to say I'm the good luck charm or anything, but
you weren't here. You were not a good luck charm here. So,
oh wow, the Vikings only made the playoffs a lot. Hey, I was there for the Minneapolis Miracle. Come
okay,
on.
All right.
Like, at least give me that, right. At least, please.
All right, oh, hi, Dom. Was that the year that you got here? Was it 2017?
No. My first year in Minneapolis was 2015.
Oh, 15. Okay.
So that was the Blair Walsh kick year.
Doesn't sound like you're that good of
no.
luck, man. I don't.
Hey, they made
so.
The playoffs, man. They had a home playoff game. How about that? Blame the weather for that one. Don't blame me. It was really cold that day. No, but as for the Lions, it's been an incredible story to watch. Dan Campbell, so many organizations say words and just, oh, we have these cliches that are going to stick. They put those words into action because all of the guys that they have wanted to mold their organization around, they've either gone out and get or they've drafted or they've brought in and said, okay, this is how it's going to go. Let's go forward together. They have truly built a team. So many guys are not, I wouldn't say similar personalities, but they're all there for a common goal. They all have the quote unquote chip on their shoulder in some way, shape, or form with something to prove. And I think that when you have that many people like that together and you forge ahead, this is kind of the proof that you can do good things.
You know, it's rare that a team in the year 2024 can build an identity because players are coming and going so much. Mm-hmm. But the fact that most of the team has been drafted by them and put together really in Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell's vision over a couple of years after they tore it entirely apart makes that possible. What I want to know from you is I want to understand what you think their window is, because Jared Goff has played so well over the last couple of years that he is going to be asking for a lot of dollars to be stuffed in his pocket. Amon-Ra St. Brown gets the deal. Yep. Penei Sewell gets the deal. There are a few other guys that will not be that far behind. Aiden Hutchinson is a legit beast and one of the best players in the league. You also saw this play out in Minnesota, where when they got expensive, it was a lot harder to build a complete team. How long do you think they have to fight potentially for a Super Bowl?
3 years right now. 3 years, because Jared Goff's going into the final year of his deal. No extension's been signed yet. And I was kind of surprised by that because I thought that maybe he would be have an extension before Amon-Ra or Penei Sewell. And then they take care of both of those guys who are drafted in the 2021 class. But if you want to talk about a quarterback who has really endeared himself to fans here, you heard it at the draft, how many people were chanting Jared Goff's name, and he was just on the stage after getting drafted so many years ago. I would say with the way things are set up right now, kind of like with the Vikings a few years ago, 3 years, because things get expensive after a while and you can't keep everybody. And I think a big reason why the offense is so good is because of the offensive line. Hey, you got Frank Ragnow, you have Kevin Zeitler, who they just went get, Graham Glasgow, who's going to be your other guard, who has a lot of experience and played in the system for a few years, and then Decker's on the other side of tackle. That is a stout offensive line, and I think that's a big reason why Jared Goff has played so well. It's why a lot of quarterbacks would play well with that type of offensive line. But Goff has done some special things. He really has. I mean, he has reinvigorated his career here in Detroit. And he said that he wants to stay here. I just think it's going to – like how everything is with the NFL, does the money make sense? And how long are you going to have that window to go? But they have a lot of young players too. And we'll see this year if Jahmyr Gibbs can take the next step, if Jameson Williams can be the true wide receiver too on this team, because he didn't have a full training camp last year. He got injured in training camp and then was suspended at the beginning of the year. I think they have a lot of positive pieces, but Dan Campbell said after they lost that game against the 49ers, next year it's going to be even harder to make it back because we're not a secret anymore. Everybody knows who we are. Everybody knows what we're capable of. The one thing is the offense is set. Defense will find out because they went out and drafted two corners back-to-back. They got Carlton Davis in free agency. They really reloaded on the back end of their defense. Do those pieces add up to the right fit? Because they gave up a lot of yardage at the end of last season, especially to Justin Jefferson in that game at the end of the year.
And yeah, in both games, and also left him wide open on a play that should have won the game for the Vikings, but instead, Nick Mullins threw a ball that looked like one of those soccer player, like the goalies when they whip it like this, and it ended up getting intercepted. But you're right about that. And that has been my big question about Detroit really this entire time, is that I know they're very loyal to Aaron Glenn. I haven't seen it. I mean, I've seen it with Brian Flores, or we saw it with Mike Zimmer, how a defensive mind can impact a defense. Now, talent is always going to be at the top of the list, but I also felt that it was pretty basic, I thought, and teams could take advantage of it if they weren't pressuring the quarterback with one guy. So I do question that. I think the secondary improving is a big deal, but I think we're going to find out now that they have a little more talent there and Jack Campbell developed for an entire year. Is this defense good enough to make them legit? Because if it is, then they are an extremely scary team.
You mentioned putting the pressure on the quarterback too. And frankly, I was surprised that they didn't draft another defensive end to try to pair alongside Aiden Hutchinson, because now you're relying on Marcus Davenport to be that answer. And he showed flashes with the Saints in his time down in New Orleans, but his problem was staying healthy. With a lot of the guys that they got, Carlton Davis has dealt with injuries too at cornerback. Can the guys that they got in free agency stay healthy and make a huge difference on that defense? That's going to be a big key to the puzzle as well. But if Davenport can play to what the expectation is and just provide a second person on the other side to not put all the pressure on Aiden Hutchinson, but in the middle, they have some Aleem McNeil is going to be a name to watch too. Great defensive tackle. If they can create more pressure, because I know a problem with Hutch at the beginning of the year was the sacks just weren't coming. And people were like, well, you're getting there. What's keeping you from getting there? And then at the end of the season, somehow, some way, he just found his way to the quarterback more and more often. But I think pairing somebody alongside him could be a big difference maker on if this defense can take a drastic step or not.
I think I've heard before, if Marcus Davenport ... and did not work out so well here last year. Let's wrap up on this. You did cover the Vikings for quite some time here. What was your favorite memory of covering the Minnesota Vikings? Give me number one. If you're going to use the Minneapolis Miracle, don't you? It's too obvious.
Oh, man.
It needs to be something else.
Oh, it has to be something
else. It's just too easy. It's like all of us. The Miracle.
How do you top that, though?
I know.
You know what it is for me? Training camps. Training camps are always a great time because I got to forge so many friendships with people in that media room and everybody on the beat. Whenever we're all there in that room together, we share stories with each other. That's probably the thing that I miss the most, just because I am a people person. I like to connect with people and everybody in that room. That's probably my favorite part of covering the Vikings and and doing the pregame shows. I mean, there's nothing like doing a pregame show at US Bank Stadium before they're about to kick off, especially when the team is winning. That is just a rush.
Well, we try to keep the TV people on the other side of the room, but we let you into our space sometimes. No, I mean, I do miss having you around. We had a lot of great conversations when you were covering the Vikings, and so we miss you here for sure. And hopefully we can do this again. The Vikings will play Detroit a couple times, so open invite to come on the show before those games. So thanks a lot for your time. Awesome insight, man. Really appreciate you doing this.
I tried my best. How about that? Trying to be a wealth of knowledge. I mean, you had Kwesi last week, and then you get me this week. Wow. It's already be a downgrade this week, man.
It's like going from the starter to the backup, you know, but that's okay.
You go from like playoff football to the preseason with me. There you go.
I do have another guest planned later in the week. This is a tease for fans that also is going to top you. So you're like the middle reliever here. We get the starter who's the ace. We get the closer who has the big music and everything else. And you're just kind of the guy who needs to get one lefty out, but you got it. You got through the inning.
Oh, okay, good. Hopefully my ERA didn't spike.
Thanks so much, Obi.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you, Matt.